One of life's great gifts is to have what we say remembered. Because when our words stick with people, we have a golden opportunity to persuade, influence, motivate, or inspire them. But it seems like every day in offices all around the world, business people squander those opportunities by speaking in a bland, boring, and forgettable way. And that makes it really difficult for them to stand out and get noticed. Hi, I'm Bill McGowan.
And I'm Juliana Silva. In a business setting, effective communications is crucial. We were astounded to learn that poor communication has been cited as the reason for $1.2 trillion of losses in business revenue. And that's why we wrote Speak Memorably, The Art of Captivating an Audience. In the book, we have a host of techniques designed to help you engage an audience in a memorable way. Here are five key ways to do it.
The first one has to do with where you place your big ideas. And as it turns out, location, location, location isn't just for real estate anymore. It matters in public speaking too. This concept is called the primacy recency effect. And it says that what you communicate at the beginning and end of a learning episode tends to be retained better than information presented in the middle. It's a theory that's been validated in experiments conducted on memory.
And we see this all around us. In fact, the great filmmaker Francis Ford Coppola uses this concept for making movies. He starts by identifying his three top storytelling points. He takes the best one and puts it at the end. He places the second best point at the beginning. And then he finds a place in the middle to insert his third best point. Yes, he may be talking about storytelling, but so are your presentations at work.
And in our years of coaching over and over again, we see people missing out on the chance to hook the audience's attention. Unfortunately, what they often resort to is this dreaded agenda slide, the most overused and underwhelming tool in any public speaker's arsenal. The scourge of telling people what you're going to tell them is rampant. In the book, we call this signposting. It's all this warning your audience of what you're about to tell them.
And this doesn't just happen at the beginning of a presentation. It often happens at the beginning of each and every slide in the presentation. The strategy you should embrace in public speaking is inform, don't warn.
Our second big learning is a laughing matter. It has to do with the role humor plays in delivering memorable remarks. There's been extensive research on the power of levity in public speaking, something we document in the book. We found some fascinating research from both the University of Pennsylvania and Ohio State University, which showed that humor was a key contributor to both virality and retention. 18 to 34-year-olds were shown news stories about politics and government policy that were both humorous and non-humorous. The result? The viewers both remembered and shared the funny ones more often.
And in defense of a speech, how many times have you been told, start off with a joke, they'll love it? Well, unfortunately, next to imagine the audience in their underwear, that's probably the worst piece of advice you could give someone. Leave the joke telling to professional comedians, and instead, think of your job as finding a humorous lens through which you want the audience to view your content.
There's no question that levity is the ultimate high wire act of public speaking. Yes, it's high risk, but it's also high reward. And we were fascinated to find out that it just doesn't make you calmer and more confident. There are other physiological benefits to using humor in public speaking. One involves dopamine, the hormone in our bodies that's been called the pathway to pleasure. When dopamine hits our brains, it generates pleasure and makes us feel good. It happens when we smell cookies baking in the oven or when we're out shopping, even during sex. So if your public speaking is triggering a dopamine release, you're in pretty good company there.
And then on top of all that, laughter can also minimize stress. In fact, studies at the Mayo Clinic found that laughter can relieve your stress by increasing the endorphins that are released by your brain. They concluded that laughter stimulates circulation and muscle relaxation, both of which can help reduce stress. And being reluctant to be clever or funny in a business setting is completely understandable. Everybody feels anxiety from the nature of the risk, but the research clearly shows that the payoff in terms of being memorable can be enormous.
The third big takeaway is something we call the Magnificent Seven. Seven linguistic devices that you can use to convert your ideas into punchy and memorable messages. All right, this could be challenging to cover all seven in just a couple of minutes, but what do you say we reveal each one and then we'll give a quick example?
Okay, let's give it a go. The first is analogy and metaphor. And here's the beauty of those devices. They make it possible for your audience to understand a complex concept quickly and easily by comparing it to something common to all of us. So for example, sitting is the new smoking. That's an analogy. So it's describing the height of the supply chain crisis as a six-lane freeway trying to merge into a one-lane country road.
Another is what we call a creative label, which is a pithy expression that you coin. The Great Resignation is a creative label. Quiet quitting is also a creative label. The Goldilocks economy, that's another one. You can see the viral nature these all have.
And then there's the twisted cliche. This is when you take a very common expression and you just alter it slightly to turn it into something brand new. For instance, in 2023, when there was an oversaturation of startup investors in Silicon Valley, we called it a seeding frenzy.
Another is wordplay. Think of Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech, in which he said that he dreamt his four little children would live in a world where they were not judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
And there's also data with context. Overloading an audience with numbers and statistics is not memorable unless you bring some context and meaning into it. So for instance, if you tell me that a windmill farm generates over 1,800 megawatts of power, I might not be impressed or interested. I may not even understand what that means. But if you tell me that it creates enough energy to power over 1 million homes, okay, now I sit up and take notice.
Another of the Magnificent Seven, original definitions. This is a fresh and different way to define certain terms. It is not the definition you find in the dictionary, but rather a complementary meaning that helps you emphasize one of your points. Give you an example. If you look up the word energy in the dictionary, you'll find this: the force or power that makes things move, heat up, or change in some way. But if you need to tell someone who's giving a speech that they need more energy, an original definition could be your palpable enthusiasm for the value of the information you're sharing. Again, it's a device that helps the audience see things through a different lens.
And the last of the Magnificent Seven is the mathematical equation. And the good news for everyone out there who's never been good at math, you can still master this concept. This is one of those rare instances when math and English come together to form a truly powerful tag team. So a good example is something we tell people about their communication skills all the time. The more casual and conversational your tone, the more confident and capable you'll seem. This is a ratio of sorts. The more you have this, the more you get that. Or it could be an actual equation. For example, authenticity equals passion plus warmth. Or leadership equals empathy plus vision.
You know, come to think of it, those last two are really pulling double duty because they're both an original definition and a mathematical equation. Our fourth big takeaway from Speak Memorably has to do with a communications dynamic virtually all of us, and I do mean virtually, have to cope with on a daily basis. And that's the virtual meeting over Zoom, Teams, or whatever your go-to video conference tool is. And what we learned is that Zoom fatigue is real.
In fact, it was validated in a European study called Technostress in Organizations. And it looked at the effects of video conferencing on a group of college students. Half attended lectures remotely, and the other half attended them in person. Fatigue levels and mood were measured with medical equipment, and what it found were notable differences between the in-person and online students. Fatigue levels grew for the video conference students who really struggled to pay attention and complained of feeling tired and drowsy and just really fed up. By contrast, the in-person groups reported feeling livelier and happier and more active.
Another strange effect we discovered from our own daily online meetings was something we called Zoomnesia, which is a decreased ability to remember and differentiate between one Zoom meeting and another. It was weird. In our own work, virtual meetings were starting to merge together in our minds. And we asked ourselves, what could be causing this? And we realized that the setting for all these meetings was identical. Every day you sit in the same chair at the same desk, staring into the same computer screen. And it's really because you have a scarcity of audio and visual cues that help trigger our memories and distinguish them from one another.
So, of course, we had to validate this theory of ours. And interestingly, we found that a COVID-era study in which healthcare workers discovered this very same phenomenon. The goal was to compare how well patients remembered medical instructions given during in-person consultations versus ones given through telehealth. Participants were asked to recall the instructions immediately after the session and again a week later. Overall, the number of details both younger and older patients were able to recall was significantly lower when they were provided through telehealth. This was true both immediately after the session and after 1 week delay. In the book, we have some effective strategies for how to neutralize the effects of Zoomnesia.
Our fifth big takeaway is such a common problem that we thought it deserved its own creative label. So we call it theftosterone. And to make sure I'm not guilty of any mansplaining here, I'm going to let you explain this one.
Theftosterone happens every single day. And it's an act of brazen thievery that occurs when a woman shares an idea with her colleagues, you know, maybe in a meeting, and later a man says almost the exact same thing, posing it as his own original idea. It happens in all kinds of workplaces around the country, probably around the world, even at the United States Supreme Court. In fact, recently, Justice Sonia Sotomayor says she frequently sees examples of theftosterone when court is in session. And despite all the professional gains women have made over the past 20 years, episodes of workplace mistreatment, which includes theftosterone, have increased 20%. So we decided to trace the roots of this phenomenon and discover that it takes hold really early in life. In fact, a professor of linguistics at Georgetown University, Deborah Tannen, notes there's research that shows how young boys use language to maintain and negotiate status within a group. Boys gain status by taking center stage and holding it. They do this through speech, giving information, telling stories, maybe even boasting. But according to Tannen, it's frowned upon for a girl to seek center stage by acting the exact same way.
Equally interesting to theftosterone's origins are effective ways women can cope when it happens to them, or better yet, how to prevent it from happening in the first place. After all, it's impossible to be memorable if someone else is taking credit for your ideas. We detail all of the strategies to combat theftosterone in Chapter 11 of the book. These are just five of the many factors that contribute to being a memorable communicator. We believe Speak Memorably, the art of captivating an audience, will help you become a more confident and captivating speaker. We hope you enjoy reading it.